Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guests today, Nick Blamire and Ethan Slater. Together, they are the minds, hearts, and souls behind the concept album created by them called Edge of the World, which also features two Broadway legends, Lily Cooper and Norbert Leo Butz, both previous guests on the podcast. I was so lucky to get to sit down with Nick and Ethan and talk about A, what is a concept album, and B, what is this concept album about? They are really special guys, and here they are without further ado, Nick and Ethan.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guests today are Ethan Slater and Nick Blamire. Ethan is an actor, writer, and musician. He was nominated for a Tony Award and won the Drama Desk Award for playing SpongeBob, the titular role in the SpongeBob musical on Broadway, which also happened to be his Broadway debut, which is Crazy Pants. He's released two albums of his original music, and when theater returns, he will star in the revival of Stephen Sondheim's Assassins. His partner in crime, Nick Blamire, is a writer and performer, and at 23 years old, Nick wrote the Broadway one-night sensation rock musical, Glory Days, which now has gone on to be performed all over the world. He has written five other original musicals, was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for his performance as John in the off-Broadway revival of Tick, Tick, Boom, and his musical Space Dogs is part of the 2022 season at the Manhattan Class Company. And together, these two wunderkinds have written and recorded a concept album called The Edge of the World, starring two previous podcast guests, Norbert Leo Butz and Lily Cooper. So now I have all four of you in my coterie of incredible guests. Welcome, Ethan and Nick. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, honored to be here.
Well, I want to just jump right in because I have had the privilege of listening to a lot of this album. And the idea of a concept album is something that people outside the Broadway space may or may not be familiar with. So I guess I want to just talk about And you guys can choose who speaks first. You're both pretty, no fighting. But sort of the way in which this concept album came to exist. And first, what is a concept album?
Yeah. So in this case, a concept album is, you know, it's like a story told through music. It's in this case, we're taking this show that we have, which is ostensibly a stage musical called Edge of the World. And we're telling the story through the songs. And I think one of the things that's really exciting about a concept album often is that each song works as its own tune. It's its own sort of pop, rock, folk track. Mm-hmm. Without necessarily having the dialogue that connects them. You know, it's like very much where we were inspired by The Who's Tommy, and, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar is a concept album. And these like, you know, these works of, I think there's also like this crossover music genre thing that happens a lot when you're talking about concept albums, that it's not just the sort of, you know, quote unquote standard musical theater thing that, that you're experiencing, but rather sort of a hybrid genre kind of vibe. That feels like my rambly, what is a concept album? Nick, take over.
Tag. I mean, I definitely concur with all that. I think like the big difference to me is that musicals, while being sort of like an inherently surreal art form, as people just like pick up and sing when they're feeling it, they can tend to be a little more literal sometimes. And like, I want to go to the festival. And I think what we've been interested in and inspired by, like Ethan said, is stuff that's a bit more refracted and sort of gives you clues as to what's going on, but that involves the audience a little bit more in like piecing together what's happening and where it's happening and how. And I think now like it's actually like, I feel like I see musicals everywhere. I'm like, I watch a horror movie and I'm like, oh, the scares are the songs of the horror movie, or the, you know, action scenes are the songs of an action movie. Or like, you know, there are so many bands like the Decemberists or Mountain Goats who release these albums that feel very cohesive. Lemonade, Beyonce, like these are concept albums. These are like, they have their own innate emotional arc, but they're not spoon feeding you all of the givens. And I think that really opens up a nice dialogue with the audience that as a listener, I'm really into and felt really right for this particular show.
So tell me about you guys coming together. Have you worked together before?
Yeah. I mean, we worked together as actors on the development and world premiere of SpongeBob. And so we knew each other in that capacity, and I was a fan of Nick's writing. And so like we worked artistically together. And then I was working on this thing and asked if he would be helpful, a helpful eye as a friend. And he saw the couple of tunes that I'd written and was like, yeah, I think I connect with this and would love to help craft it with you. That's when we started on Edge of the World.
Go ahead, Nick.
No, please. tag for Nick. I just think it's an amazing thing I think we all know that like acting is the gateway drug for artists, right? It's like the thing that you get taught in middle school, and it brings you into the world of creativity. But then, you know, as you get older, you start finding all these different facets and I certainly got obsessed with writing really young, and I'm from DC. Ethan's also from DC. And so we had some like parallel experiences and favorite theaters and grew up kind of like around, DC is a really good kind of indie theater scene. And mm-hmm. It was something that as we were working on this big honking commercial musical, we're talking about like our mutual love of like just the little guy and Ethan had written these amazing songs. And I feel like something that, you know, as you so kindly introduced us, Alana, I wrote a show when I was 23 that had a crazy trajectory and taught me a ton about like both what I knew and what I didn't know. And the biggest thing that I didn't know was structure. and just like the value of structure and efficient storytelling. And so I'm older than Ethan. And so as I was listening to Ethan's stuff, I was like, let me just save you the time that I wasted or used to screw up, to just like, I see what you're trying to do. And I think maybe like me pushing back on you can help you crystallize more what you mean. And it became just this really fun dialogue that like in a lot of ways was just for fun at first and then became, yeah. I think as with the best things, the fun turned into like, oh, wait a minute. Like, do we have something here? And if so, what do we do with it? And now there's a pandemic and what do we do with it in a pandemic? And, you know, that brings us back to Concept Album, which was kind of the only version of expression we could figure out that really made sense.
Well, right. And like talking about something starting as like a fun exercise, we had been talking about recording an album sort of in various little ways. And part of that conversation, we're like, well, what happens if we just strip out all of the dialogue from the script? Let's just like get rid of all the book scenes. Let's see if we can tell the story song to song and then like have these sort of interstitial physical moments that we would, you know, and we did that. And it was just like much clearer. Like immediately we were like, oh, this is the story. And so a concept album not only is a really fun expression of the show in like one iteration, but it's actually a really great way to tell the story and to introduce the story to the world.
Yeah. It told us what it was, which is the thing that, you know, the best, your art is smarter than you, you know, and it's a cool thing to kind of have to like put your ego second to like listen to it. Like, what does it want to be? Oh, it doesn't want a ton of literal given circumstances. Okay, it's pretty simple in its plot, but it's complicated in its inner life. How do we highlight that correctly? Just the songs. Okay, you know, it's been cool.
It's so crazy trying to talk about the creative process, right? Because it's so intangible in certain ways. Yeah, although I'm totally curious because, you know, I mean, there are master classes now on everything, right? Like when you mentioned sort of talking to Ethan about structure based on your own experiences, is that something that can be taught? I mean, I know in screenwriting, you're like act one, act two, you know, this is what has to happen by this page. Is that, can you talk a little bit about that? And sort of when you said to Ethan, like, let me save you a minute here. Like, what is that look like?
Totally. I think it can be taught. And I actually think that
we should sign up for Nick Blamire's master.
Yes, exactly. $100 an hour. But, I think it's like the left brain, right brain interaction, right? It's like right brain is where the magic and the inspiration and the emotion are. And the left brain is the math. And I feel like one thing that I realized sort of in a sort of high impact way in my crash course in writing for Broadway was that everybody sort of hands the keys over to the creative and is like, hope it goes well, hope you're a genius, you know, whereas in movies from the beginning of time, there has been a real sense of we only have so much money to pull this off and we want to spend it correctly. And there's a math to the magic. And what I started realizing when I started working in movies was this three-act structure is not that different from the two-act structure of a two-act musical or the one-act structure that most like, you know, so like Bat Boy or some of my favorite off-Broadway musicals are like, because there just is an inherent beginning, middle, and end, everything. And starting to realize, okay, you know, as I was saying about action movies or horror movies, like there's a moment in the first 10 minutes of every movie where the character implicitly states their want, right? And that's their I want song. And so often we sort of value inspiration and like the deity coming down and sprinkling fairy dust on us over perspiration and knowing what the what way to work is actually helpful to your telling your story better. And I think something that really like just shocks me is the feeling of when something is said clearly in the right spot in a story and how much it hits and how much power it has going forward, how you don't have to restate or create like a overcomplicated, plotting to keep people interested. Like if the audience can identify themselves with the characters and feel like, oh, I understand this person or I am this person in some way, then they'll go anywhere with you. And it's there. So it's like to think that there isn't math to that, I think is a little idealistic. And I don't mean to say that it's cynical to think about it that way. I think it actually is the portal to the most fulfilling version. And it's been a fascinating experiment because obviously like there is this piece of it that is, you know, as Ethan was saying about cutting the book, like that wasn't a math problem. That was really trial and error and writing a whole book and realizing like, this is not right. And so Stanley Kubrick, there's two quotes that I love. Stanley Kubrick talks about like letting God into the room and like letting the mistake into the room. And the idea that something on the day will happen that will screw up your plans that feels, you know, speaking of another quote, John Lennon's, you know, life is what happens when you make other plans. And then another quote that I love is this idea of building the bones and then smudging, which is a Susan Sontag quote. And I love that too, because it just allows for, you know, both sides of your brain to have equal say in a storytelling process.
Ethan, I feel like Nick just told us that you have actually written the entire book to this musical, or much of it. I think that's what I heard him say.
That we did it together.
We did it together. Yeah. I think that there was like one of the things that I really love about writing also is like reading 24 books that all say the same thing in different permutations, and then like, you know, using that as sort of this backbone to like, you know, lay the inspiration on. And there's something that I see in a number of those books that Nick just sort of referred to, which is like, actually what you should do is write your first draft and then go through and try to structure it. Cause the structure is going to be this really helpful way to lay something out. If you know the structure, your first draft will have that baked in, which is sort of a really nice thing about it as you like, you know, learn more and practice more. But like in my experience, like that's also a really nice thing is like, let the inspiration flow. And then as Nick said, like, perspire to make it work.
What was the burning desire to tell this specific story? Because it has to, I mean, you're going to stick with something for a really long time. You have to really want to tell this story. So unless you're a gun for hire, which was not the case in this particular artistic endeavor. So what was the thing that you were like, I want to write about this?
I mean, honestly, I was like making a list of all of the things that I would want to write about. And I was like, okay, well, like let's today, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm going to write like 20 ideas down. Okay. And I probably wrote 5. And then like, I just sort of kept on doing that. And this one idea that just like sort of kept on sticking with me was that I wanted to write the story of like a boy who was raised in isolation in rural Alaska and uses his imagination to cope with the loneliness of his surroundings.
And why, like, how did that even come to you? Because that does not sound like your personal childhood experience, correct?
Right. No, it's not my personal childhood experience. But a lot of it, like, you know, I think that there are elements of it that really spoke to me, this idea of like feeling isolated in different ways, even when you were surrounded by people, the idea of like being an incredibly imaginative kid, honestly, like a big part of my like self story, my story of self is that like, until I was 10 years old, I just like lied a lot. Like I told a lot of lies. And now I like to recontextualize and reframe that as like, I was a storyteller. I was telling big stories about little things. But there was like a moment I remember in sort of like early middle school, like sixth grade, where I was like, oh no, actually this is not a good thing to do. Like telling people things that aren't true invalidates everything that you say that is true. And so like, I remember that being a big learning moment for me, but as a kid who was telling stories all the time, you know, that was just sort of how I saw the world. And I started to believe them a little bit. Like, I remember telling my cousin that I was being followed by a CIA spy. And like, obviously that's a game, right? Like that's a game that kids play. Like, oh no, I'm being followed by the CIA. But I like sort of got really into it and like really started like believing it, like, you know, was hiding and things and like doing all these like goofy little, you know, kid things, but they were really real. And like, who knows what that comes from, like delusions of grandeur as a kid or whatever it is. But like, I wanted to write about that in some way. And I think that this was a way to do it, which was like, take away all of the other variables, take away the idea of trying to impress someone or trying to, it's just like, you're building your own world because there's nothing else.
Okay, first of all, I love Edge of the World, and it's going to go on, I would imagine, to be performed either in concert or become an actual show that people get to see. And that is so thrilling. But I also really encourage you to write the show about the kid who lies all the time. And I want you to remember every single one of those things, because just as an aside, I'd like to help you with that. I had a similar thing. I was at a summer camp and it was my summer of lies. And I told people I had a twin brother at the camp who did not exist. So talk about like, so I was constantly like, you just missed him. You just missed him. And that
you're like, as people walk into the room, you're like, bye. Oh, he just,
wait, I want you to meet my counselor. Oh, well, he'll be right. So I think that just as an aside, it's such a fascinating thing. The things that we choose to make up and what other kids have that we think we want. Anyway, I haven't thought about that in so long. So thank you for sparking. Actually, I'm going to write it. I'm going to write that musical.
I have to, I am not lying when I tell you that I also did this.
Yeah, for sure.
I was heavy set when I was a kid, and I told some bullies that the reason that I was heavy was because I was playing Falstaff in a production of Henry IV and I gained weight for the role.
Good lie. Funny lie.
Like, but okay, so what
the
hell?
That's a sophisticated lie.
But what am I doing?
Falstaff.
But Falstaff. I mean, he's a great character, a lot of great lines.
You would have known anything about who Falstaff is.
Oh, bullies, you don't know who Falstaff is? That's on you.
Let me pull out my copy.
Oh God, my quarto. But I do think there's something, you know, listening to both of you talk and be taken back to that place. Like, A, clearly we're not alone, thankfully. And B, there's something just really fascinating about, Ethan, what you said, like this idea of where does the truth end and the lie begin? And obviously we're dealing with that so much now in this idea of like, well, I believe what I believe because it's my opinion. And it's like, right, but you're not a doctor. And it's something that I think is sort of like a strange contract with humanity that like, you know, we're all gonna, we're gonna find that line together as a collective. And I think in a way that was like one of the things that really drew me to this idea was that in society, that is a real trust fall that has been, you know, a contract that's been broken over and over and over. And society is just like all this scar tissue of like what to believe and who to believe. And so Ethan's idea of really cleaning that slate and going out to, you know, a place where there is no one ostensibly corrects the problem, but you're bringing yourself with you. And you're an imperfect human. And so you're going to create a new society with all of the same foibles that have plagued humanity forever, even in this new potentially, you know, a place without any variables.
Right.
And
neutral.
And I'm so fascinated by that. And I think that creates, and especially between a father and a son, and we have the great Norbert Leo Butz playing Henry, the father, that like, it's just a really imperfect, messy situation of like what people pass down to their kids.
People will listen to this album and I want them to listen to it and then they'll hear how beautiful it is. And also just the music itself. The lyrics are fantastic. It's such incredible storytelling. Lily Cooper, who when she was on the show, I think she said you guys went to college together.
Yeah,
Ethan, we went to college together. Vassar.
That's right.
And so there you are on Broadway together, and all of you. And Norbert is everybody's favorite, right? Like, we all grew up listening to him, and the headiness of working with the person you've admired, you know, lying on your bed, holding the liner notes and having them in your ear. And now he's the star of this thing you wrote. Must have been pretty magical, I can imagine. You have both had really tremendous success at the very beginning of your artistic lives. And I want to talk a little bit about how do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. I can start with a little ramble. I think that, like, it's impossible not to be aware of the sort of privilege of that and the right place, right time of it all. You know, I ended up being asked to audition for SpongeBob because I auditioned for a summer stock theater, and they were like, oh, this kid's a little square and we're having trouble finding someone to play this role. We've been looking for 7 months and, like, you know, let's just see what happens. So, like, I feel really, you know, lucky. I was very prepared for it and all of that. So, you know, if you're a young person listening to this, it's not just luck. I was prepared for the audition and blah, 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 all of that. But, like, I was also really lucky that that happened. And it's sort of impossible to forget that because the ride is so wild. So I also feel really, like, grateful that that has turned into opportunities to work with people who I really love and respect. And, like, you know, Nick is somebody that I met through that wild ride. And there's just, like, all these amazing people that I met. So I think that the biggest thing for me is, like, I feel very privileged to have expanded my network of friends and artists at a young age, in a way that I would have been able to do, but differently. I feel very grateful for that. I also think that, like, there is no resting on your laurels in some ways. Like, there are ways in which the early success feels like it's continually helpful and whatnot, but also it feels like it is what it is. It was one thing that I'm very grateful and lucky to have done, but also what's next is sort of always how it feels. Yeah, I hope those don't just feel like platitudes, because those mostly are that's really how I think about it, if I think about it, which I'm not sure I always do.
Yeah, I mean, it's very tricky, because I think, you know, you're stuck with the American dream, right? Speaking of, like, you bring yourself with you. Like, we don't really get a choice about being born into a society that values fame and fortune. And so you're going after it, you know, whether you like it or not, to a certain degree. And especially if you get into to the arts, there's this sense of, like, well, I, you know, a human, like, I want to be seen, right? I want to be heard. I want to be made real by having an audience or something. And then the biggest version of that is to be a star or to be a success. And I think something that happened to me, and I think Ethan and I have talked about this a little bit, like, and you're mentioning it too, in the way of, like, what's next. There's this sense of, like, when it happens, it's like, oh, but I'm still alive and I'm still moving forward. And, like, now the thing that I was going after is behind me, but I'm still moving forward. And my wife says it really well. She's like, I feel like we're going after a carrot that, like, wilts the closer you get to it. And I think, you know, the tricky thing is, like, there's no way that if you haven't done the thing that you've set out to do, you'll ever believe what I'm about to say. Cause you need to do it in order to know that the carrot is wilted. But one of the things that I am most grateful for, along with everything that Ethan said in terms of, like, it is a privilege to be lucky enough to get to find out, right? But that in finding out and realizing like, oh, my entire life is not fixed and I'm not set for life and I have to continue to fight and work for my next job, it's really put the focus more on the fun of it and the process of it and being like, this making something is like kind of a holy act and I am fully obsessed with it and it gets me up in the morning. And yes, I want the job and yes, it hurts when I don't get it. And yes, a lot of the time is spent trying to get it. Mm-hmm. But on a good day, it's about the doing. And, you know, we all know that that's a platitude for sure. But it's just, I mean, and Alana, I'm sure you feel this. I mean, I admire your career so much. I'm a Lois and Clark fan, you know, like I love looking at people's careers and thinking about like, oh, they did that and then that. Like, it's all so fascinating. And you know, it's that tip of the iceberg thing where like you see people's accomplishments and think like, ah, what a perfect patchwork. They just like hop from lily pad to lily pad, when actually maybe the most interesting things they ever did were like the gray, weird work in between those peak experiences. Mm. You know, that like really fulfilled them and fueled them and certainly mm-hmm. fueled me. And I think both of you to continue to like dig on these subjects and like, how do you write something that gets people feeling, you know, how do you repay the favor that like Sondheim did for all of us, you know, or Jonathan Larson or Tina Landau, you know, these people who have like really set a bar as to like what's possible. It becomes more about trying to reach that more than like, can I make $1 million?
Well, I think that one of the things that you're saying that's really making me think about like, what is success? And I think that even in the experience of doing SpongeBob, I think I became really aware of the fact that what was quote unquote success about that experience was that I loved what I was doing and I was so proud of it. And a lot of people got to see it. Like it was this combo of things like, yes, I think in a lot of ways, if I wasn't proud of what I was doing, it still would have been felt like on the outside, like a success, but on the inside, the reason it felt so good was because I was so proud of what I was doing and I loved my job. And I feel the same way about Edge of the World, like getting to be, even though we were on Zoom in a recording session with, you know, one of my idols, Norbert, and one of my best friends, Lily, like, and obviously Mick, and then new friend, Aaron, who is in Minneapolis producing the hell out of this record. Like, that felt like such a huge success. And I like watched these videos that Mick took of us like in the recording session. And I'm like, we're both just like, you know, oh, this is a podcast, so I did some really great moves, dance yeah. moves mainly.
Celebratory
gestures. Celebratory. But it's yeah. just like that feels like, to me, that feels like a big success, like a massive, huge moment. And so I think that it's just about like constantly redefining it and like it's in the doing of it, as Nick said, platitudinously. It's like in the doing of it that you're like, wow, this is, I'm grateful that I get to do this
at all.
Well, yeah. First of all, we'll call the episode Platitudes. It always needs a good title. And platitudes yes. is such a good word. You guys are two of the most talented people that I've had the privilege of talking to, but I didn't know how kind you would both be. You hope, and it's always wonderful when that happens. And they're not necessarily intertwined, talent and kindness, as we know, and read about on the daily. So thank you for not just making beautiful work, but for giving others opportunities to do things that make them feel the way you guys just described feeling when you love the thing you're doing. I know both Lily and Norbert and everyone involved in this project felt like it came to them just at the right moment that they needed it. There was a sweet spot with Lily being pregnant, Norbert where he is in his life. Like it was so serendipitous that you guys wrote this piece and that in the pandemic, which, you know, this episode's gonna live forever, right? In the world, but we're in such a specific moment in time that already is so hard to hold on to as we start to go back into some things we did before. And to have your record kind of be a part of the things we get to listen to in this next moment in our lives is kind of amazing. And then we'll get to listen to it later on and kind of remember the first time we heard it. And now you guys made that album that's going to be that thing for so many people. And it's really incredible. And I just so look forward to seeing all the things that you do. And thank you for bringing so much joy into it. Because we all get, it's intoxicating. It's totally intoxicating. So
thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you. I'm going to ask you each before we go. Nick, I'll start with you. Can you share a little known fact about yourself?
Little known fact. Yeah. When I was 4 years old, I had open heart surgery. And it is probably the root of everything about me, in that, like, I was so young. I was the oldest kid, so my parents' first kid, and they were totally worried I wasn't going to make it, and I had no concept of that. And I was in the hospital for 4 days, and now in a surgery that, like, now, you know, happens in, like, it's like outpatient now. It's not even a thing, but back then it was really scary for my parents. And and I think it put, you know, a lot of just sort of life is precious, like, right at the forefront of my brain, subconsciously, in a way that has been both great and hard for my life. And that, like, each moment feels so precious that when I don't use it or I misuse it, I feel like I've, like, really, you know, wasted more than maybe I have. It's just, as you said, like, life is really hard to hold anyway. And then you add what we're going through on top of it. And it's like, you know, there's a sense of, like, we just got to lean back and, like, let the wind carry us to a certain degree. But I can't extricate that from my mindset on living. And it's something that, like, I don't really talk about a lot, but, you know, totally happened. So that's a little guy.
Nick, Ethan, were you, beautiful. Unless you say you were the child prodigy surgeon who did that operation, nothing you say is going to be very good.
Sorry.
That's right. No, that's okay. No, well, I was actually the architect who built the hospital.
Right.
Little known fact. Exactly.
That's right. In fact, I mean, not a big deal, but.
CIA's on your tail.
You can't pull that. You gave me a start.
I'm so sorry. A start?
Give him a start, Nick. He got very nervous about it.
Lance.
He gave me a start.
Oh, my word. He was so scared. A scare.
Larry Meyer.
All right, Slater.
All right. Well, slightly different angle of childhood.
Exactly.
I'm going to take it in a slightly different angle, which is that I was... Also, just want to say really quickly how, like, what a beautiful, like, way to understand this moment that happened in your childhood, Nick. I haven't heard you talk about it like that. And that's just anyway. When I was a kid, I was deeply obsessed with baseball. And I collected baseball cards and have thousands and thousands and thousands of baseball cards. And I was, like, obsessed with memorizing lineups of the different teams. I still remember the 2004 Baltimore Orioles mostly. I was, like, super into it and convinced I was going to be a Major League Baseball player until I was in high school and realized I wasn't very good at baseball. But I don't know if that's actually, it was, like, this interesting, huge part of my life that is not a part of my life anymore. I go to maybe one baseball game a year if I'm lucky. I, like, you know, I'm just, you know, it's just this interesting thing that I don't feel sad about having lost a little, but I do feel a little nostalgia about it. What is this element of, like, wow.
Theater's a team sport, right? You're playing a different kind of team sport.
It's so true. I mean, I think that's right. Like, there's a reason that I loved not just playing baseball, but, like, knowing all about baseball teams. Was I was like, you know, I was obsessed with like that sort of like 1950s folklore of like sending a baseball to the New York Yankees and they would send it back and they've all signed it. And you're like, wow, like Mickey Mantle and all his teammates signed my ball, you know?
Totally.
And so I would try that. And I think I never got a ball returned, but like, I was very obsessed with like, you know, whatever. It's okay. It's fine. Like, I actually am super over it.
Have you sung the national anthem?
I did. I sang the national anthem at a Mets game. And
so
it was,
how was that?
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was
there you go.
Awesome.
Full circle. And I made a square. As I full circle.
Square skull.
Oh, that's so awesome. Nick and Ethan, this has been delightful. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on the show today. You guys are
what a pleasure. Back at you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
All right. Take care, you guys. One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time. Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know. The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. And the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.